Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If there was no social networks, it would have never been sparked, because the whole thing before the revolution was the most critical thing. Without Facebook, without Twitter, without Google, without YouTube, this would have never happened.
That is Egyptian activist and Google executive Wael Ghanim speaking on 60 Minutes last weekend about the key role played by the internet and social media in bringing about political change in Egypt. Much attention has been paid to how big a role the U.S. played in convincing President Mubarak to step down. But it turns out the U.S. also played a role in what was going on in the streets, albeit an indirect one. We are joined now by one person who actually did some of that training. Egyptian-born Mustafa Ayad was formerly a staff writer with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and now spends his time teaching activists and journalists throughout North Africa and the Middle East in the use of social media tools to disseminate information funded by USAID, part of the federal government. Welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming on, Mustafa.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
You worked with activists and journalists in Egypt and Iraq, I understand. We know what happened in Egypt, and there are protests and clashes going on in Iraq right now. Tell us more about your part.
As a trainer, I'm an independent contractor who was contracted out for subcontracting firms that work for, instance, the State Department, for USAID.
Mustafa, I want to try to get us on a better connection here. Are you on a speakerphone? Can you just pick up a handset? You are on a handset. Wow. Well, it's really fading away. But try again. Just speak right into the phone. Let's see if we can do the best we can here. Otherwise, we'll have to call you back.
Mustafa?
Yeah.
Are you on the regular phone?
Okay. So we're going to get Mustafa back. In the meantime, you may have heard about the situation developing in Bahrain today as the protests continue to spread all over the place. And Iraq, we've hardly heard about Iraq, but Iraq where... Of course, the U.S. invaded several years ago, and we can talk to Mustafa about this once we get him back, because he consults activists and journalists in Iraq. There have been pro-democracy protests in Iraq, which does have the beginning of a democracy. I saw one report that said al-Maliki, the president of Iraq, was encouraging the protests and saying, you know, let's go. We want this kind of thing. We were first at this. So we'll get a reaction to that when we can. But back with us is Egyptian-born Mustafa Ayad, formerly a staff writer at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, now spending his time teaching activists and journalists in North Africa and the Middle East in the use of social media tools to disseminate information and paid by the U.S. government to do that. Mustafa, sorry about the connection. Tell us again who you train in social media exactly and how you do it.
A lot of times we are training citizens, we're training youth, journalists that work for independent newspapers, independent magazines, television stations. I can speak more authoritatively about the work we did in Iraq, the work I've done in Iraq with youth journalists and TV reporters there.
That would be great.
Yeah. Currently in Iraq, you have a drive and demand, actually, for basic services. As you know, there are issues with water, sewage, electricity, as well as a demand for freedom, intellectual freedom. A lot of newspapers are tied to, a lot of news organizations are tied to political parties. And political parties with the strongest bases often get their message out. So independent voices are marginalized. What my trainings attempt to accomplish is to teach journalists, teach independent reporters, citizens, how they can get their stories out without having to go through those party channels.
So is this, in effect, the U.S. government paying you to teach Iraqis how to dissent from the government, which is U.S.-backed?
No. I mean... As far as I'm concerned, I'm just teaching tools. I'm teaching you how to use Blogger. I'm teaching you how to use Twitter. I'm not teaching anyone dissent. How they use the tools is a different is a different story. The U.S. government doesn't fund me directly. I'm a subcontractor that's contracted out on projects.
Is it troublesome for bloggers to question whether they should be taking part? Is the U.S. seeking
to... Yes. I think it is sort of a conundrum for them to be thinking about whether or not they should be taking part in perhaps a U.S.-backed NGO training, or for that matter, any NGO training, because it suggests that foreign elements are controlling what you say or how you disseminate that information. So I think, yes, and a lot of people do think about that, but I think in the end it's about building capacity and getting your stories out. And a lot of the people want to tell their stories and don't want to be hindered by political forces in their countries.
I want to play you a clip of President Obama explaining what he sees as the role of social media in these protests. Listen.
You can't maintain power through coercion. At some level in any society, there has to be consent. And that's particularly true in this new era where people can communicate not just through some centralized government or a state-run TV, but they can get on a smartphone or a Twitter account and mobilize hundreds of thousands of people.
So that seems to back up what you were saying a minute ago, that in a way what you're training people to do is get around state-run TV.
Yeah, but some of the biggest problems with this is that while President Obama, his statements are, and the U.S. government's stances are for Internet freedom, we're still supporting a lot of the dictatorial regimes in the Middle East that, when it comes down to Internet freedom, will shut down the Internet on their citizens, or they'll turn off cell phone coverage. So there still needs mobilization and organization on the part of the citizens there to happen before any of this real change, this real Internet freedom can come about.
And as part of your training, how to work around government interventions like that, like flicking the Internet kill switch?
I think sometimes I talk about the best way to, in trainings, to get your message out is to first interact with the people on a ground level. I think everybody knows that if you're mobilizing for, let's say, a demonstration, any sort of demonstration, for Internet freedom for that matter, that you need to let people know on the ground. You can't just have a virtual existence. While a virtual existence helps, it isn't always the case. I mean, the April 6th movement in Egypt in 2009 had a Facebook following of 80,000. The protests themselves, some of them were considered unsuccessful. The strike in 2010 with the We Are Khalid Said page, as everybody knows, they had 500,000 followers. And they were able to get to Tahrir Square on the 25th.
And some people say that while social media was important in those cases leading up to this winter, it was Mubarak's turning off mass communication that really got people to leave their homes and go to Tahrir Square to find out what was going on. Do you believe that?
No better way to excuse the language, piss off Egyptians than to turn off their cell phone coverage. They will be out in the streets demanding that you turn back the cell phone coverage back on. And it's not just about the coverage. It's about communicating with family. You shut down lines to people, to loved ones, you're going to have a problem. And Egypt is a country, as you know, of 85 million. That's a little more than a quarter of the Arab world. So turning off information, ways of getting information out of the country is going to be damaging.
We're talking with Egyptian-born Mustafa Ayad, formerly a staff writer with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who now teaches activists and journalists throughout North Africa and the Middle East in the use of social media tools to disseminate information funded by the U.S. government. I think some people had the view, Mustafa, that the protests in Egypt were a kind of spontaneous, let's all meet up in Tahrir Square flash mob event. But you could talk about the organization that went into making this happen through training such as yours, right?
Yeah, the similar trainings like mine have been taking place in Egypt since 2005 and before that. What they seek to do is enhance the use of social media and organization and mobilization. You cannot just simply go on Facebook, for instance. People are failing to recognize that it was meetings in people's living rooms. They were changing houses day to day to organize this protest. They made a concerted effort to make sure that there was on-the-ground representation, flyers, printouts, in particular neighborhoods, in poorer neighborhoods, where you might have lower internet penetration rates, where you might not have as much Facebook representation, or might not have as much Twitter representation. So they went out and they did that street work in order to galvanize their online activities. Some of the things that they did, for instance, was putting up fake times for their protests, fake locations. If you know state security is watching your online activity, what better way to get around it than to give fake locations? The Iranians, I believe, also did this. Ways to get around it are commonly known, and they're being taught in these trainings. Also, teaching people how to use their cell phone cameras. There are a number of journalists that work with NGOs that teach citizens how to stand behind someone and steady a camera when you're in a mob, in order to get that good camera footage out of a protest, rather than this footage that's everywhere. So these trainings are enhancing the way that mobilization is going on the ground.
And another example, we put a link on our website to the MAP project that you've helped to start for Iraqi protesters. Tell us what's on that, pertaining to, I guess, past protests and future protests?
Yeah. Since January 31st, there have been about 31 protests across Iraq. 12 of them have happened in Baghdad itself. Some parts of Baghdad, they've set up tents, like the tent city that was in Tahrir. These are groups of youth that have formed a coalition called Iraqis for Change. It's iq4c.wordpress.com, where they're asking for Iraqis to just submit their demands for what they want, for ultimately a day of demands, a day of rage, on February 25th. So that's coming up. And a lot of these are taking place not just in Iraq, but in Bahrain, as the latest news is going on, in Yemen, in Libya, and they all have different dates. But they're all building on the same formula that took place in Egypt, where you have organization and mobilization going on in the street level, but then you have a representation online. And what these maps are doing is documenting those instances of protests in order to show the world that it's not just some sort of spontaneous youth movement. These are people working for concrete change. In Kut, for instance, they've taken over government buildings. In Kut is in Iraq. In Sulaymaniyah this morning, there was large protests where three to five have been reported killed. This hasn't been verified. There's video of police firing into a mob of 1,000 who are protesting against the local government there. The KDP has sent in the army. And so these protests are part of a concentrated effort to bring about change and demands for the Iraqi people, people's protests. These aren't just some random instance of anger at the U.S. or what have you. These are people wanting their services, people wanting their freedoms.
So how much are you following what's happening throughout the region now, Bahrain, Yemen, Libya?
I'm tied into a number of organizations that work with a lot of these populations. Things like, I don't know if you know about the Speak to Tweet program, which when they shut off the internet in Egypt, Google helped set this up, and it was mobilized through a number of media development people that work in the region and also internet activists where Google set up this program where you can call into a voicemail system online called Say Now, so using your cell phone or your landline, and you would leave your message. It would instantly be turned into a link sent to a Google spreadsheet, and then it was translated by Arabic to English translators, Arabic to Spanish, or English to Spanish, and as well as French. They were double-checked by groups of translators, which were all volunteer and were all galvanized using the power of the net, and then put back onto Twitter. So if you turn off Twitter, if you turn off the internet, we can still use our phones to get our messages out. They're doing the same thing in Libya. They're doing the same thing in Bahrain now. There's also a crowd voice blogs, which allow media from citizens to go up onto the web. There are ways around that, of course, in case they do shut off the internet. Cell phones, I think, are also a big part of this, cell phones and multimedia messaging. Before we had multimedia messaging, galvanizing people through text were the only way to get people out. Now you can use media to do that as well.
And we put a link on our website, folks, to the Bahrain crowd voice as an example, but also very relevant to what's going on in one of the main countries where there is confrontation today, including a violent government crackdown. So before you go, does what you teach in training activists and journalists and social media in the Mideast have a part to play in putting the pieces back together in what's happening in your country of origin, Egypt, now? Is it a force for cohesion as well as protest?
Yeah, I think it is a force for cohesion. First of all, it was a force for galvanizing. It wasn't just about anger. It was also about creating a list of demands, and demands that could be met. I mean, it wasn't just about Mubarak leaving. It was about amending the Constitution. It was about women's rights. And what we're seeing come out of that is the debate goes further on the Facebook pages. This wasn't just a Facebook page against police brutality, against Mubarak. It was for the coming together of ideas on how we can form this new government. What we really need is, does the military need to be involved in the process? That is going on Facebook, on Twitter. It's also going on in what I'm calling the ethos of Tahrir, where Tahrir Square is more than just a physical location now. It's an emotional state of mind. It exists in the hearts and the souls of people that are going out now in protests across the Middle East and facing dictators and facing police crackdowns and military states.
I understand that you were Skyping with protesters in Tahrir Square. Does that mean you were doing kind of fast-moving, live-action, specific training for the protest at the height of it?
Yes. During the height of the protests, to sort of hammer the idea that these tools are changing the way we can give out information and learn from each other. I Skyped in a friend of mine. His name is he's a blogger in Egypt. He's famous. He calls himself a micro celebrity. Mahmoud Salem. He is also the moniker is online is Sand Monkey. The Rantings of Sand Monkey.
Yeah.
He called in to talk to journalists as well as a few youth. The day it was his second day of going down to Tahrir, he was disoriented. He had been through the tear gas. He was simply talking about the tools they used to mobilize and how they were getting around police barricades to take Tahrir that first day. But he was talking more about the Facebook organization, using your cell phone as a device to understand where police are stationed throughout downtown. And so these sort of live trainings hammer the idea home that this isn't just about poking your friend on Facebook or using your cell phone to send a picture of someone's vanity license plate. It's about being able to change your life in a meaningful manner and also to get your information out. What we're trying to hammer home isn't just using these tools for the sake of it. It's getting your stories out, and getting your stories out without censorship.
Well, you're doing something right, and we really, really appreciate you sharing some of this with us. Fascinating and important. Egyptian-born Mustafa Ayad, formerly a staff writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, now training activists and journalists in North Africa and the Middle East in the use of social media tools to disseminate information funded by the federal government. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will ask, should the U.S. government stop guaranteeing mortgage loans, with the head of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, Phil Angelides, whose report, of course, looks at the role of Fannie and Freddie in the crisis.